minutes, and then we'll get into, you know. Oh, we're back. Oh, my apologies. We're back, Marjorie. You know what happens? It's just we're so excited about the three-hour thing. We're just reminiscing about it with Jonathan Alsop that we forgot we were.
In any case, John giving all this wine.
Okay, fine. Revved up. I am Jim Browder. She is Marjorie. And we've reached the tipping point. Maybe it's more of a toppling point. It's official. America now consumes more wine than France. So is this really significant, given that America consumes more of everything than France? Here with us in Studio 3, I said this a minute ago, but he's still here, to elaborate on this and other news and to serve us wine from the wine world, of course, is Jonathan Alsop. Jonathan, as you know, is the founder of the Boston Wine School. Jonathan, it's great to see you.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you, guys.
So before we get to how much wine we're all drinking, and apparently it's a lot, I want to know about this whole direct shipping thing, which we can do now, but apparently it's fraught with details and red tape, so it's not going to be that easy to do. What's the deal?
Yeah, well, I cannot completely sort out all of the details of it. It is a little more free in terms of consumers being able to order wine from vineyards and wineries. But individual vineyards and wineries still have to have an individual special license to ship into the state. It's not free trade like everyone would like.
Can I add
to
this?
It's still a complexification.
Wait a minute. Do they have to pay Massachusetts to get that special license?
Yes.
How much?
Yes. I don't know.
It's a few $100, but that's not really the issue.
Outrageous.
Actually, I know a decent amount about this, even though I'm not the wine expert. You are, because remember we had Drew Bledsoe in here, the former quarterback of the Patriots?
Yes.
He in this place, his winery is called Doubleback. I think it's in his home state of Washington State. He was lobbying hard for this. We finally became the 40th state. The issue, which is more in the weeds, but the good news is they finally said you can order direct. You can only order up to 12 cases a year from the same winery, which is, I mean, it's a lot. The problem is, and this may sound to people listening like it's not a big deal, there's a fee for the delivery truck under the law, which sounds reasonable. But the problem is it's not a fleet fee, the whole fleet, like UPS or FedEx. It's an individual truck. So the concern is that some of these companies are going to say, I have 42 trucks. I'm not paying a fee 42 times. So the good news is you can order. The bad news is you may not have somebody to deliver it because the legislature essentially
did. In Massachusetts.
Yes, did two-thirds of what they should have done, three-thirds.
And you know what? And this is typical. Ridiculous. And this is typical of how wine is thwarted in its desire to be perceived as a food. You know, you'd like to be able to put it. Marjorie, we were talking about running into each other at Trader Joe's.
Yes.
Would it not be lovely to go online and put in
an online
order and have food and wine delivered? I mean, it seems like a natural enough
thing.
But
you can do it with food.
These are not like Jello shots. We're not ordering some sort of perverse intoxicant.
Well, we know
here.
Why Massachusetts messed things up here. I'm sure that there were forces that didn't want this to happen. They made sure that their legislators
were
well rewarded for not making it
happen. It's not just Massachusetts. It's America's ambivalent ambivalent relationship with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, supposedly we're very prohibitionist. It's okay to drink, not to excess. So we're like this non-drinking culture that, well, as you guys were pointing out, now drinks more wine than France.
Yeah, but
very ambivalent relationship with alcohol, and we express it in these weird ways by delimiting its delivery to our home. So you have to have an ID. You have to be there.
Oh, that's another thing, by the way.
You have to sign for it.
And the person signing for it has to be of age.
And so all of this weird ambivalence is expressed structurally in the roadblocks and the impediments that we throw in front of something as simple as having some wine delivered to your house.
Okay, so the 40 states all have these very convoluted rules.
Can we dispose of one thing before? You brought wine, as you always do, which is wonderful. We're going to get to that in about 30 seconds. The biggest non-headline of all time. This headline I started with, America now consumes more wine than France. Well, it's because we have five times as many or eight times as many people as France. They're still consuming, what is it, a bottle, 1.2 bottles a week.
So these are figures from 2011. So France, in terms of per capita consumption, is number five on the planet at 46, well, behind like Vatican City, you know.
I mean, that is not true.
No, Vatican City is number one in terms of per capita consumption.
Number one wine consumption in the world?
Andorra, Luxembourg, and something called Norfolk Island.
Wait a second! Don't gloss over this.
France is the first like country with more than 1,000 people.
Wait, is the Vatican thing because of mass? Because they're serving wine to all the parishioners?
Maybe because you have the vow of chastity, Jim, you need
to drink a lot.
Yeah, Jim, that's good. That's why it is. That's good thinking. I like. Great way to spin that.
What'd you bring? Bishops can really put it down.
France is number five. 46 liters. A year per person. That's a bottle a week.
Yeah.
USA.
Where are we?
So first of all, we're on the second page.
Okay.
Okay. We're not even on page one of the per capita.
What do we drink a week?
We are 10 liters a year. So France, one bottle a week. Us, one glass a week.
Is that really so?
Yeah, in term per capita.
Okay. So a big.
But the fact that we're 300 million people, France is 60 million people. I mean that's how we consume in total. So if you look at total consumption, the United States is number one. We consume 13.5% of the world's consumption of wine.
So we're
number one.
Do we drink
France
other things?
Number two.
Like hard liquor and beer more? I mean,
You mean more than wine?
Yeah.
Well, everyone is fixated on this USA versus France.
But wait a second. Jonathan Alsop does not run the Boston Hard Liquor and Other Alcohol School.
I just thought he might know.
Well, you know something? It's funny you mentioned that because we also do whiskey classes.
Oops. Sorry about that.
And we started to develop beer classes. And,
okay. So let's move on.
All interesting.
Here's what we really want to talk about to you today. And apparently you're going to treat us to some blended red wine to begin with. Marjorie and I were talking about the whole notion that so many wines, a greater number of wines, at least that appear. Peers are blended wines these days. And I learned today for the first time that federal law only requires that 85% of a wine in a bottle be of the grape variety that is labeled on the bottle, which means that almost everything is a mix, right? A blend?
In the USA, 75%.
Oh, I'm sorry.
75% in the USA, 85% in the EU.
Okay,
so when you see Pinot Noir and it says Pinot Noir, it's at least 75% Pinot Noir.
Okay, but before you talk to us about blended wines from the winery, here's an issue I need you to resolve for me as a personal matter. I said to Marjorie today, sometime when I'm having wine at a meal at a restaurant, and I still have a third of a glass left.
Right.
And they said, do you want something and try another one? And I say, yes. And they start to bring it over, and they say, I'll bring a new glass. I want to say, but I know I'm going to be totally uncool and ridiculed by the wait person.
You just want to say, I'm fine with that glass.
Pour it right in there, and it's going to be a mix of what I'm currently drinking. Is that just completely inappropriate?
You know, at the wine school, when we do classes, we are not super strict about like sterilizing your glass between wines. You know, we're going from lighter wines to more intense wines. Sometimes people will, if they want to, will put water in their wine glass and rinse their glass out a little bit. It's fine to do that. The thing that comes up in a restaurant, you know, this is the equivalent of asking the restaurant not to bring you another fork. You know, if they are intent on bringing you another fork, you can't say, no, I'm going to sit here for this 8-course meal. I'm going to use the same knife and fork. Don't bring me a clean one.
But the restaurant
will bring you a clean knife and fork whether you want it or not.
No, but Jonathan, that wasn't my concern. My concern was, let's assume I'm you and have your expertise. And I have a quarter of a glass of, let's say, Pinot Noir left. And they're offering me something else. Would you ever consider saying, you know what I'd like? I'd like in that glass, filled up 3/4 of that glass with something else to blend with the Pinot Noir. Would you ever do that in a restaurant?
I wouldn't do that intentionally. I mean, I would just do that if it was like at the end of the night and everybody was hanging out and you want to say, hey, don't get me another glass.
So you say the blending should happen at the winery.
Go ahead and do it. Don't get me another glass. I'll just use this glass. I think that's completely fine. I mean, we're a little bit too formal sometimes when it comes to wine. So anything that we can do to, you know, chill that out a little bit.
But as a basic rule, don't blend at the table. Allow them to blend at the winery. Is that where you're going?
Sure.
So what are we drinking?
So I've brought two things. I brought a blended white wine from New Zealand. This is a winery called Huia. They're in the north part of the South Island. This is a blend of Pinot Gris, which the Italians call Pinot Grigio, Gewürztraminer, which is a very difficult word to pronounce even for Germans in German. And Riesling. And this is a blended.
I love Riesling.
And it's a blended white wine. And, you know, when we teach this wine, what we teach about this is, you know, that maybe you don't want to try, maybe you're shy about trying a Gewürztraminer. Maybe you're intimidated about trying a Pinot Gris. This is a way to try new grapes. Because now you have this Pinot Gris, this Gewürztraminer, this Riesling blend. Next time you're out someone and someone says, hey, want to try something that's going to blow your mind or want to try something you've never heard of, you're going to be more open to that because you've already tried it in a crowd. This is like the same way as having a bunch of people over. Like, even if it's people you don't like, if you have enough people over, you can stand them for an evening, right? So this is what makes blended wines great, is that, you know, in one wine you get to try three.
You'll find some taste that you like.
You get a hint of that, and now you can go off and explore a little more. So this is the Huya. It's called the name of it is Hunky Dory. And you see there's a graphic of a dory, you know, a little boat and a fisherman.
How much does that cost?
It's called the Tangle, $12.
Oh,
$11.99, $12.
That's not bad at all.
The hottest wine in California right now actually is a blended white wine from a winery called Mathiasen. It's a blended white wine. It's blended from grapes that no one's ever heard of before. It's $40 a bottle. I mean, it's a blended white wine for $40 a bottle. It's a premium price for a white wine. So blended wines are totally happening.
Do people tell you that they get less tired drinking white wines, blended or not, than red wines?
Less tired? In terms of
fatigue.
Is this a euphemism
for intoxicated?
No, it's not a euphemism for intoxicated. Okay. If you just feel like because of the tannins or something in the red wine, you might get more tired.
Well, you know, the red wine can be big and demanding, and you know, white wine is light and fresh, and you know, it doesn't require a lot of attention.
Yeah,
like some big red wines. They've got a lot of alcohol. They've got a lot of flavor. There's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. You know, you can't ignore them. You know, they're sort of needy in some ways.
And people don't ignore them. What I read in the last couple of days is not only do Americans like red wine better than white wine, the world likes red more than white. Mm. And what shocked me, because I thought there was a gender divide. We were just talking about it in the tech industry.
Yep.
Women prefer red wine, even though not in as great a percentage, over white than men. What's that about, do you think?
Well, a lot of our gender ideas of what women eat, how they drink, what they like to drink, a lot of these things are really coming apart. I was mentioning the whiskey class we do before. Overwhelmingly, women.
Really?
Okay. And I thought it was going to be guys. With some women, like, coming along, it's the opposite. It's women with some guys.
You know, you're looking at the martini queen right over there.
That's not whiskey, though.
Oh, okay.
It's not counterintuitive, but it's not what my shallow, one-dimensional, prejudicial thinking led me to expect, right? I expected it was going to be guys.
So this whole
gender idea is starting to come apart.
So forget
in terms
gender,
of preferences.
Though. Jonathan Alsop, why is a worldwide thing... Is red preferred to white? I happen to prefer red, but I don't even know why.
Well, this is in terms of the development of our tastes as people, this is the arc that it takes through the course of our lives. When we're babies, we eat baby food. Soft food, sweet food, palatable, very easy to eat. A few years pass, next thing you know, we're eating like Roquefort cheese and oil-cured olives that are bitter and, you know, this cheese that's high in ammonia. You know, we're eating that and we're saying, wow, yummy. I mean, in some ways, it's the natural arc of the development of a person's taste. You know, you start out with, you know, right now in China right now, the main white wine category is German Riesling because it tastes good.
It does taste good.
It tastes good. It's obviously good. It's sweet. It's good. It's yummy. And these are people, you know, the Chinese wine market is at the beginning of its wine life. And naturally, this is what people drink at the beginning of their wine life, these tasty, easy wines. And it's inevitable as time passes, you just begin to develop a different kind of taste, and your taste changes to things that are more extreme and a little more dramatic, like red wine.
Jonathan, we got to go, but before we go, tell us one more time what each of these were. Okay. They're both great. Two blended,
so Huya,
white and red.
So this is the Huya Hunky Dory blended white, Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminer, and Riesling. And then this red is from Sakonnet Vineyards in Rhode Island. And this is called the Blessed Blend. And this is a blend of Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and a grape called Lemberger, which is a German red grape that they're growing in New England now.
So, how much does the Rhode Island red go for?
You know what? It is not released yet, and they were not able or willing to tell the price. So
they're both delicious.
We'll see. Good. Enjoy them.
They're both delicious.
Jonathan, you're the best. We love you. Jonathan, also.
I like whiskey, though, too, even though I like martinis as well. I like a lot of
Marjorie,
different things, actually.
You got to come.
I should come.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, a little Maker's Mark.
Absolutely.
Pretty good.
Listen
I like
to her.
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan Alsop is the founder of the Boston Wine School. His latest book is Wine Lover's Devotional, 365 Days of Knowledge, Advice, and Lore for the Ardent Aficionado. Jonathan, as always, so much fun to talk to you and so nice to have a little sip of wine here on Boston Public Radio.